history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are heroes around us. There are men and women with incredible stories to tell if we'll take the time to ask a few questions and listen to their memories. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, boy, do we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, we're always inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And today, what a beautiful spot we are in. I'm looking right out the window at Bear Mountain in Wyoming near the town of LaGrange, but it's pretty rural where we are right now. This is a cowboy life with snow all over the place right now, but we're talking to a real cowboy. In fact, a Hall of Fame cowboy, John Sussex, 91 years old. But you didn't grow up in Wyoming. Where are you from originally?
I was born in Goodland, Kansas.
How big a place is that?
Oh, it was just a farm town, I guess. Pretty good sized town at that. It's a small town, though. That's where I was raised, Sherman County, Kansas.
Did you have a big family? Did you have siblings?
I had two sisters older than me and one brother younger. That was all of us.
And you grew up on a farm?
Yeah.
What'd you have to do out there on the farm?
Whatever my dad told me to do. I'd drive a tractor or gather cows or whatever. We had a lot of horses and cows.
And I know it gets pretty cold and windy out here in Wyoming, but how does that compare to what you experienced in Kansas? It gets pretty windy out there, too, doesn't it?
There's nothing to stop the wind but a barbed wire fence. That's it.
And what do you remember about that childhood? Was it a simple life? Was it a carefree life? Did you feel the effects of the Great Depression? What do you remember about those years?
I remember the Dust Bowl days. I remember my mother lighting a kerosene light at noon so she could see in the kitchen because the dust was blowing so bad. And that was in the Dust Bowl days, in the 30s.
And did all that have an effect on your family and the farm and your guys' ability to stay there and live there?
I think in those years, my dad finally lost his place. And we moved to Colorado, and he went to work for somebody else. And nobody had any money in those days. Everybody, the whole country went broke.
Well, so how did that affect you? How did you process all that? Was that a shock to your system, or was it just one day at a time for you?
It turned me off of farming. Somebody else can do the farming. If you can't make it living sitting on a horse, you do. Might as well forget it.
Uh-huh. Well, I know your life has backed that up. And I wonder, you think you could count how many hours or days or years you've spent on horseback? What percentage of your actual waking hours in your 91 years do you think you spent on horseback?
I spent all my life on horseback except the time I was in the Army and overseas. And when I was in the Army, I was in the cavalry. So I took basic training on a horse in Fort Riley, Kansas.
Well, I bet you remember something about December 7th, 1941. Do you remember how you found out that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor?
I really can't remember.
You were pretty young. You were must have been just starting high school. Do you remember friends of yours leaving for the service or young men around town disappearing all of a sudden?
No, not really. I didn't, but pretty soon I disappeared with them.
And was that your choice or Uncle Sam's choice?
That was my choice. I joined the Army right out of high school.
Why'd you do that? What was your motivation?
I don't know. Just headstrong, I guess. My dad had a deferment for me, and I didn't take it. I went ahead and joined the Army.
Was the deferment to work on a farm or what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It was an agricultural deferment.
So you didn't have to go. You could have stayed here. You could have sat out the whole war and not put your life in danger at all. But you chose to volunteer. Were you at all concerned that that might be a fateful decision that didn't let you come back to America?
I don't ever remember being afraid, and I never thought about getting killed. Just that simple.
When everybody hears what you went through, I think they might be surprised in light of what you just said, that you never had those fears. But tell me about your training. You said you trained with the cavalry. What kind of stuff did you do?
We trained the horseback on just basic training and learned to shoot rifles and All that, just the normal stuff. And we did train with horses. But from there, we went overseas, and we took a boatload of mules with us. But we lost them in the Indian Ocean.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. Before you tell us everything that happened there, what was the plan? And you're just a teenager still, but what did you understand about what you were supposed to do?
Well, I don't know, just what every other kid did, I guess. I joined up and ended up on a life raft out in the middle of the Indian Ocean for a week.
But they send you out of San Pedro, California, on a ship with you and some other guys in your outfit, and then a whole lot of animal companions. You had over 300 mules with you? What were you guys going to be doing with all those mules?
Packing over the hump in Burma. We were supposed to go to India, Calcutta, and from there we would use those mules to pack food and army supplies over the hump in Burma into China. But we never did make it there.
You were going to join up with Merrill's Marauders and deliver the supplies that way. And when you say go over the hump, now I know you have mountains here in Wyoming, and we're pretty up high altitude right now, sitting here talking by the fire. But you can go to the Grand Tetons here, and those are pretty high. But those mountains don't come close to what you guys were going to pack over. Did you understand how extreme this was going to be to pack those mules over those kind of elevations?
No, I never thought about it, never even worried about it. I don't ever remember being afraid or upset about it.
Had you ever been on a ship before?
No, that was the first go-around on a ship, too.
How'd you take to that?
I took all right to it. I didn't get seasick like a lot of guys did. I'd stand up on the bow and watch them big fish from the head of that old boat. And that old boat would only go about 7 knots, and that was it. There was no Liberty ship.
Well, and when you're on a slow ship out there like that, and you've probably heard that other ships have been sunk by submarines, you still weren't scared? Didn't think maybe they could get you?
No, never thought about it. Mm-hmm. Never thought about getting killed.
Did you see anything interesting on that voyage? Because from California to the Indian Ocean is a long way. Which way did you guys go, and what did you see?
We loaded on a San Pedro and shipped out there. And I don't remember how long it was. They torpedoed that ship. We lost all of our mules and some of the men. We ended up on two of them old wooden 8x8. Life rafts tied together. There were 17 of us on them two rafts.
Where were you when the ship got hit?
I was sleeping in a mule chute. I didn't sleep down in the hold like the rest of the men. I didn't like it down there. I made myself a bed out of an old army I caught up in one of them mule chutes that we loaded the mules on. And they was things, the chutes that we could pick up with the cables and stuff and lift them off the dock and set them down on the boat. And that's what I slept in. And when they torpedoed that ship, I rattled around in that mule chute like a rubber bowl.
Well, and you can laugh about that, but I'm just imagining that may have been a life-saving decision for you to sleep up there as opposed to down below. Were there guys in those sleeping quarters down below who were killed in that submarine attack?
Yes, there was. And I went ahead and got out of that mule chute, dressed completely, even put my shoes or boots on and everything. So when that boat sunk and we got on the life raft, I was completely dressed and even had my boots on. Never got those boots off for a week.
Well, how chaotic was that scene? Can you help us understand how quickly it was sinking or what was going on aboard that ship and the atmosphere around you as you're trying to figure out what just happened?
No, that they torpedoed that ship in the middle, and it broke in two. And then they torpedoed the number one hold, and that front half of that ship broke off from the back half and sunk. And I remember seeing the back half float away. There was, I think, two men in the engine room on the back half that was still in that back half of that ship when it floated away. That's all I remember.
And did you get to this wooden raft right away, or did you have to scramble to figure out where it was?
No, we knew where it was. My buddy and I had that thing tied to where we got off of that ship, and we ended up with two of them tied together, and there were 17 of us on those two rafts when we finally floated away. And when we did, the back half of that ship was still floating out there in the ocean. I don't know how long it floated, but I think it finally sunk too. But there was two men in the engine room, they told me, that couldn't get out.
Did you lose guys that you had gotten to know, that you had trained with, that you were friends with?
Oh, yeah. We lost men, and we lost all of our mules and everything. We got out of there with the clothes we had on our back, and that's it.
So as you described it, the ship is hit in the middle, and then again in the front, two torpedoes hit this Liberty ship. So you've got probably guys without rafts trying to float in the water. You've got hundreds of mules in the water. And I don't want to compare the life of a mule to the life of a man, but I imagine that you had a bond with those mules if you'd been training with them and you were expected to pack them across the Himalayas. What was it like to see this devastation and realize there's nothing you can do to save men or to save those animals?
You don't worry about it. You just keep going with your own deal. The boys that worried about it is the ones that would get you killed because they couldn't think. They was afraid, and they couldn't help it. I don't remember being afraid. And I remember a mule trying to get on the raft with us, and I had to knock him off with a short tibuffo that was floating by to keep him off. There wasn't room for him on the raft.
Yeah.
The mules, of course, didn't make it, and a lot of the men didn't make it.
Well, and that comes to mind, too. Were you able to help some other guys get to the raft or get them aboard? Did you see guys struggling that were trying to find something to float with?
Yeah, if anybody went by and they was needing some help, you can just reach out and help them, that's all.
And what time of day was it when this happened? You said you were asleep, but was this at night? Was it in the morning?
10:30 at night, and the moon come out about then, and that sub that sunk our boat come up about then when we finally got on those rafts, and it went around and out of sight. It went around where our ship was, what was left floating, because the back half of that ship broke in two, and the back half of it was floating. And that submarine come out of the water and come out and went around. And I saw it fire two shots. I saw two tracer bullets in the sky. And that's all the last time I ever saw it. I don't know where it went from there, but that was it.
So again, I'm just trying to imagine what this is like. You're out in the ocean. You're on a raft. It's dark out. You get a little moonlight. Was there fire anywhere on the ship or anything that gave some more light? Or was it hard to see? Could you tell what was out there?
No, you couldn't. It was dark. It was 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see. I think the moon did. The clouds moved a little, and the moon did come out one time, I remember. That's all. That's been a long time ago. I can't remember everything.
But there are also some things he can't ever forget, and we'll hear about it when we come back. What other hazards did John Sussex and those other survivors face? How did he finally get out of that predicament? And what else did he do during World War II? We'll explore those questions and more with 91-year-old John Sussex of LaGrange, Wyoming. For photos of what he looked like during the war or on horseback, or his view of Bear Mountain right outside his house, visit hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they're going to your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.